once again, technology has interrupted progress.
So we're going to have to hurry because I'm supposed to be getting into another meeting now. So
okay. Well, I've tried to make you hurry, but you have slowed me down with your profound statements and your thought processes. Normally, people answer these questions very quickly, but you have so much to say and there's so much meat. So there's two questions, three questions left. One is, what's your advice on achieving? Well, I think you've already stated what's your advice on achieving what you've already achieved. What do you feel are your strengths? You've already defined your strengths and weaknesses. What is your best advice to incoming entrepreneurs, step by step?
All right. Well, this is not where I'm going to talk about the values.
Well, there's one last question.
I know, but this is where. I mean, my advice is, you know, first of all, the creation of a concept, the creation of an organization, has to come from a place of purity within the self. I mean, you know, you just have to. This is, you know, it's like it's creation. So whatever is put into that initial creation, whatever forces, whether it's, you know, it could be greed, there's a lot of forces that aren't that great.
Yeah, there's greed and fear of loss.
Yeah, there's fear, there's greed, there's all these things that you can bring into it. So the more you can distill yourself down and crystallize that idea from a really pure and selfless place, that's where you got to start from. That's the moment of conception. You know, that's where you bring it in. And the purer and the cleaner that is, when that seed grows, the more you're going to like what grows from that seed. You've got to be really careful to create, especially if you have a partner or something like that, you have to be sure that all this, you need consensus. That is the moment of where you need consensus. And I don't think any time after that you really have to, you know, be operating from consensus. But, I mean, that moment is when you need to be totally in the same time and place and have the same concept and idea.
Proving you correct, when I was interviewed by Good Morning America and they did a series on entrepreneurs, what they discovered was that the entrepreneurs did not know when they would become, that they were millionaires, that they were so focused on the product or service and not realizing that they were millionaires. Okay?
And if you do it from a selfish place, what you're going to get is a selfish, you know, that's going to manifest. So you just, you know, that's the first thing. And then the second thing that I feel very strongly about is that companies in the future have to be guided by a set of principles and values. That companies need to be value guided. And the way we're doing it at Sundance is that collectively we're really looking at the core values of our organization and identifying them collectively. And then we're taking these values, and these values could be things that are kind of broadly based, like integrity, which can include a lot of different values, or they could be like, you know, honesty, profit might be a value. You have sustainability could be a value. You know, you identify the core values that are to guide the organization. And then the real key to this is to then prioritize those values so that the highest value is the value that you will never compromise. Like, you're going to let the company fail and go down before you compromise that value.
There's a list that I'm going to send you as the last part, and what they are is the abilities, characteristics, and tools of an entrepreneur. I'm going to say a few of them, and then I want you to name five that are most important to you?
I'm almost done.
Attitude, being a warrior versus a warrior, partnership, acting on your dream, plan your work your plan, that kind of stuff. What are the five most important?
I mean, I'm talking about moral, kind of core moral values.
I understand. The five most important attributes leading to your success.
So the idea is that if you prioritize these in the one that is the highest value, the one that you'll never compromise, I mean, that's the deal breaker. It's like, okay, company's got to go. Whatever happened, we got to this place, and I'm not going to compromise this value for anything.
Right.
Down to the lowest one. And by identifying these values, you can now have a really strong rudder to navigate the decision-making process of that organization, because what you can say is that I'm never going to compromise a higher value for a lower value. So let's say you have, you know, honesty and profit.
Integrity.
And you say, like, oh, well, so if I'm dishonest here, I could make more profit. So which is more important? Should I be honest, or should profit be a higher value? Okay? So you get what I'm saying. So now it really, it's like those are the challenges. Those are the times when we're tested in terms of our ability to navigate our organizations. And the more our organizations start to more and more reflect these core values, the more prosperous they'll become, because in fact, they're going to be reflecting and being associated with and aligned with creation, as opposed to aligned with personal satisfaction.
So you're actually making an analogy between the creation of the earth and creation period with the creation of a company, which leads hopefully not the current situation, which is the last thing.
Because, I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
When Eve ate the apple, I think Eve has eaten the apple, and utilizing your entrepreneurial, moral, metaphysical skill sets, how will we survive the current economic climate? And you have a special situation where there's some money landing to enhance your business, but you know about your friends and other entrepreneurial associates and et cetera, and other businesses that are failing. How are we going to survive this? Do you have any solutions? We've already discussed how you're currently impacted.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, again, I'm going to come back to sustainability, which means that companies that are out of balance, which means that that the corporations are actually drawing more wealth from their existence than what they're giving back to the rest of humanity. That is unsustainable, and that is what we're seeing right now. There's been a huge redistribution of wealth to a very small number of people. This has happened over and over again. This is, in fact, just a reflection of us, of people. So you can't separate the people from the economy and the corporations. So, you know, essentially what's going to have to happen...
They're not reinvesting it.
People have to start working on themselves. Like, if the personalities and the makeup and the positioning of the people that are running and doing these corporations isn't... If they're not working on themselves, then the corporations are going to continue to be a parasite on the earth. We're not going to be in harmony with our planet. And what's going to happen is you're going to get these negative feedback loops, either from people who are being hurt by the activities of these organizations, or the planet, which is being hurt by the activities of these organizations. It's a simple equation. People want to make this so complicated because they want to protect their egos. They want to protect their fears. They want to protect the things that have organized these organizations for years. I mean, we are a completely fear-based organizing principle in the world right now. And in order to really change it, we're going to have to get rid of that and start operating our organizations from a sense of love and service and values that can align us in a sustainable way with creation.
And furthermore, the only sustainability perpetuates prosperity, which leads to the sustainability, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you can have moments where, you know, it's like truth. You know, you can create an illusion for a period of time, okay? But that takes energy. That energy that it takes to prop up that illusion starts to get more and more and more and more. You start having to dump more and more energy into the illusion to keep it from breaking apart and all of a sudden from the truth to prevail. And that's what's happening on the planet right now.
Well, getting down to things like on the assumption that despite the fact that 80% of all new startups fail, the 20% that do succeed so overwhelm the benefit of the ones that didn't succeed, and that the capital base is not being shared and is not available to the 20% of startups, which America is based on entrepreneurial freedom and not...
Why isn't capital available right now? Because everybody's scared. Why aren't the people that have all this money, everybody wants to pin this on the government. I'm sorry. But, you know, all the wealth is in the freaking private sector. And everybody should be screaming at the private sector to freaking invest that money. That's who they should be looking at. Everybody's looking to the government. That's absolute BS. People should be, like, banging down the doors of the richest 1% of this freaking world going, it is time for you to invest in the planet.
Well,
that's where the money is. That's where the wealth is. That's where it's all been sucked off, siphoned off into that area. And no government is going to be able to change it if people are still scared.
I think, this is the first time I'm going to disagree with you. I do agree with you that there is that issue,
the idea is it's just never worked.
But
economics is just an illusion.
But
it's just an excuse for people to, you know, keep redistributing wealth into the upper class. And, you know, people aren't going to tolerate it. And so now you have, you know, Occupy Wall Street, and it's a huge movement. And mark my words, it's the most powerful thing that's happening on the planet. And I guarantee you that movement's going to grow, because at people's core, they know this is true. They may not have the words to completely articulate what it is that they're feeling.
Well, let me pose a question to you that somewhat contradicts, but I believe you have a point. But now the second point is, you got to understand that governmental action emanating from fear and from a position has enforced what I used to on private banking to reduce its lending facilities based on FDIC ratios of equity to capital. And furthermore, the Dodd-Frank Act will completely close down the ability for small banks to loan money to small entrepreneurs, and therefore you can't discount. You honestly can't discount.
There's no contradiction here.
Okay. I mean, the government, the government's revenues are trillions of dollars, and how they use it has an impact, and how they regulate has an impact on the freedom of entrepreneurialism to exist. Don't you agree?
I think that regulations. Okay, if people were truly in their highest self, then you wouldn't need a... You know, this is what Thoreau said, you know, the best government is the government that governs least, right? You know, I mean,
That's right.
The Republicans stand on this.
Right.
The problem is that can only happen when people are actually of high enough caliber to take personal responsibility, where these issues of, where these lower vibrations, these lower personality traits of, you know, greed, selfishness, fear, where all these things prevail, okay, the only reason why we need regulations is because people are not there. If you deregulated things right now, the chaos would be incredible, and I guarantee you that what would happen, like, if you want to take this, take the bank bailout, okay? If we had really done that, we should have let all those banks go down. Well, we would be in the worst freaking depression that anybody has ever seen right now. And nobody wanted that, okay? That is a result of people. People did that.
Yes, they did.
Human beings.
Yes, they did.
Human beings did that because they still have these traits that are undesirable, that create, that are not aligned with creation.
Yeah, in terms of my business, they turned making money on a mortgage, because it was based on reality, into selling the mortgage.
Right. They figured out how they could trick the system.
Right.
They figured out ways to trick the system, and, you know, essentially, I mean, there's deeper things to that, too, which is like, well, how do you create value? So, okay, let's take real estate. So what in the world happens when you create value of something based on a demand, on a desire, a human desire?
All right.
Now you're on a roller coaster, because, you know, that desire from humans could come and go. There's no real value. So how is value created or destroyed with a single piece of property? It's not related to anything. It's a complete illusion. Value is an illusion right now. There's nothing real to value on it. It's like when you could, like, take value, like when you get down to the core, it's like, wow, food, that is, should be a real value.
Wait a minute. Surely you're not saying shelter, the demand for shelter, is...
I'm just saying, how do you value something is a really important thing, because people are making and diminishing vast fortunes based on a value system that is just an illusion. It's not real. It's just a manufacture of human brains and minds that learn how to trick a system.
Well, the demand for shelter is not inclusive in that selfish thing. The demand for shelter
let's really look at how we value stuff.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just like, we've so twisted the value chain of how we value things, and we've been able to manipulate it for personal gain, that we no longer really understand the true value of things, and we are always going to be subject to the potential wild gains and crazy losses, because it is not real anymore. It's just an illusion. So,
well, what,
deep thought, this is kind of deep thought, it's not something you'll probably use in this interview. But,
yes, I will.
You know, I really believe that there's some core fundamental flaws in our economic system. It's sort of like, oh, the fact that, you know, and I think Jesus had put his finger on this, and he, you know, that's when he went in and, you know, turned the tables with the money changers.
Right.
It's like the fact that people can make money and not really do any service or not really provide anything, but they make money just because they have money. And so that creates a system where the more and more money you have, the more and more money you make. That is a concentration of wealth for doing nothing, for, like, actually not even providing any service, really.
But,
so, you know, you have these one systems, like these economists that look out there and they go, oh, well, you know, we need to have eternal growth. Well, that is a flawed concept, and nobody wants to go to the core of that concept and go, you know what, for the last 150 years, we've been flawed. Because people have built their identities on it, they've built their careers on it, they've done it, and it's served a lot, you know, a few people, in terms of getting really rich. So these notions have been, you know, tightly held belief systems that don't really, they're not true. They have flaws in them. You can't grow an economy forever. You can't do that. It's an impossibility. So why are we even resting our, all of our livelihoods, all of our economies on a flawed concept? Nobody's really thinking about sustainability and going, well, what is it really? How can we really be sustainable?
But wait a minute, you can grow an economy through in sustainability.
That's right. So that means you're going to have to change the system, because if all the system, and this is where, you know, a lot of theories of thought go to this notion of interest and stuff like this, as that being a real critical problem. Like, you know, the Federal Reserve, you know, that's why, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, you got to get rid of the Federal Reserve, because, you know, they're skimming off the top. Okay, just because they have the money. Well, that in itself, you have to grow in order to overcome that interest rate. So, you know, now that system is forcing a malignancy on the planet, because it has to grow in order for it to be okay. And that's why when, you know, systems get in trouble, they bring that interest rate down to nothing. Because it's like, uh-oh, squeezing the system. You know, maybe they need to go to a negative interest rate and put back into the frickin' system what they've pillaged for the last 150 years or whatever it's been, you know, since it was started. You know, what is it, 100 years?
These are big thoughts, my friend.
Yeah, these are big thoughts.
How about identifying some little baby steps? because you understand that 28%
organizations having value-centered organizations. You know, that to me.
Well, how are they capitalized, my friend?
You know, and what? Everything else is just going to be a train wreck. I mean, this thing's so complex and convoluted. I don't think that we're going to get out of this without at least one or two major train wrecks. We put our finger in the dike and avoided a major train wreck 3 years ago or whatever it was, 4 years ago. And that really, you know, if the Republicans had really believed in their system, they should have let all that shit go down. They should have just...
Well, they were a minority in the Congress, but Bush did start it with the TARP, there's no question, and I believe that Bush elected...
Nobody was going to let the banks go down, because the ending result was catastrophe.
Right.
Well, you know, this train wreck is going to happen because the fundamental system that all this rests on is flawed.
So despite the fact...
recognized that from the beginning.
Despite...
And, you know, it's all the same stuff. You're using the same mentality to fix the problem that created the problem. It's just not fixed.
That's great. So despite the fact that you offer optimism, hope, and methodologies, you're predicting, because of the complexity of what we've dug ourselves into, you know, I've always said that a rut is a grave with the two ends kicked out of it. And this one's a deep one, that because of the complexities and the interactions with emotions of greed and fear of loss and stuff like that, that it's not, it, the solutions of today will only be learned by the disasters, the imminent disasters of today and tomorrow.
Well, and that's why, you know, as a company, we have chosen to not really get into a lot of these capital, you know, not capitalized through outside investors, not become dependent, you know, to really try and grow the company organically rather than through all this outside, you know, we're trying to maintain an integrity that allows us to be a source of empowerment so that as stuff starts to crumble, there's a place that people can come to that can go, wow, this can start to support me. It's like, you know, if one life raft has got a hole and is sinking and another one comes by that's actually stable and has something good to offer, well, people jump on it.
You're trying to... you're doing what I love, which is modelization. You're creating a model. The only clink in the armor is some of the capital that's generating that model is arriving through, not through value, but through situational governmental landing of capital. But even
So let's just talk about that for a second, because this is really important, because people misunderstand renewable energy. So I really want to be
clear. Oh, they're damn idiots. One of my cohorts wrote a thing on sustainable energy that made me so mad. You're supposed to respond to them, that I'll send it to you. Okay, it is absolutely pathetic, and of course. My best friends at Fox completely do not understand renewable energy, and the concept of right now we're in a position. Here's an environmentalist myself who believes in renewable energy, wants it to work so badly that he was willing to risk his whole life savings on it. Okay, and yet right now my solution is, you know, you can't really afford. You have to use these things that are destroying the earth in order to correct the balance sheet and work and invest and the profits of these things, some of them at least, into developing renewable energies as the ultimate answer. Because when the gas company says, well, gee, we can provide you energy for 100 years, 100 years is a minuscule amount of time. This finiteness of the solutions are ridiculous. You're taking the long view, which has to be taken. And, but go on.
Well, that's true. I mean, all of what you say has a lot of truth to it, but the fundamental thing is that, again, dirty fuel technologies that have essentially created our current economic system enjoy like 14 to 15 times the incentive that renewables enjoy. And not only that, but the downside effects of dirty fuel is completely socialized, that they've externalized the downside cost onto all of us and onto the, you know, so they've privatized the profits and socialized the losses. And they enjoy huge incentives. If I want to take the Republican standpoint, which I agree with.
Stop banging on the Republicans, please.
I want to say Republicans. Me, the thing that would be of value is to remove the incentives completely from both technologies. And what you'd find is that renewables would stand clearly as the absolute winner.
Wow.
And there's just no question about it.
Well, I clearly know that about biomass from my company, but
no question about it.
But you missed one thing, which is amazing because you haven't missed anything. The economic cost of correcting the problems caused by the dirty fuel.
That's the externalizing the downside. That is.
Oh my God. What people don't realize, if they really are into greed and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, is that the economic cost of I don't even know how you'd rebuild the ozone layer. It doesn't even matter whether you believe in global warming or not.
That's what I said. They've privatized the profits and socialized the losses. So the loss of the ozone, the cost, all those externalized costs.
Do you think anyone's identified?
It happened with the cigarette companies. So at some point, you know, the society said, hold on a second. You've got a flawed technology. We're going to make you pay. Okay, I think that the same kind of thing should happen to the dirty fuels, because we know we can't just, unless we just want to go catastrophic, you know, tailspin, they're going to be here for a little while. So at least what we should do is make them so expensive so that those fuels, the people who utilize those fuels, are going to have to pay the cost of cleanup, of all these environmental and social problems, because it's health issues, it's environmental issues, you know, there's transitioning issues.
But they've got us in such a position now.
Yeah.
We're so broke. we're so broke, 28% of the people behind their mortgages and another 15% of the renters are behind their rent. We're so broke, we can't even afford to make these energies more expensive. They've got us in the perfect storm.
Exactly, and that's why it's going to be a train wreck. And they did it purposely. They knew it. That's why they've been lobbying for it for years. And it's the perfect train wreck, and that's why I'm hopeful, because I know that it's possible for us to create centers of empowerment and joy and goodwill and high prosperity and right livelihood on the planet. But I also know that the effects of what's going on out there is going to also be affected by all of us. I mean, it is going to affect everybody. And so, you know, my personal life has been about, you know, finding a place where I know that I can live a sustainable life if I need to. I've found a business and a group of people that I can work together with to try and help others along that path. And that's the mission. That is the mission of Sundance and of what we're doing here. And, you know, let's not forget that personally we're all feeling it right now, that we're being challenged on so many levels personally, that to not have the support for the individual within our workplace just is unconscionable. And so we bring the, you know, we want to bring that into this company. So that is...
That's David Hollister from metaphysician, philosopher, serial entrepreneur, giving new solutions to new problems, giving old solutions to new problems, and giving us a so eloquently a perspective, both entrepreneurially and philosophically, and combining so many elements of morality and integrity and good business practices and smart business practices. I just want to thank you for taking the time to share this. Actually, it's not an interview, David. It's a treatise that has to be studied. What you've done and what you've said must be studied, looked at, analyzed, and spread. And so, given the passion I have for the truth, as I said when I invented Sorrel Ridge, the fruit and nothing but the fruit, the truth and nothing but the truth, this interview will be posted on interviews.org, entrepreneurshipinterviews.org, and my goal is to integrate these interviews into internet publications and blogs and books that should be required reading for the people who make these decisions. But you've given me material that makes it not just wise, but crucial to the salvation of the world. That's what you've done, and I'm really grateful for your for both you, your mind, your challenges, how you've dealt with them, and how you shared them. And thank you very much for this interview. There's nothing I can say. You've got me stuttering at the profundity and the linear presentation of the problem in a simple enough manner so that it doesn't confuse people, but actually illuminates. And thank you so much, David.